Starting a new life in Australia isn't easy.
A lot of companies have rejected me.
Sometimes I feel like, oh, I'm gonna quit, I've given up.
Work in Progress is a podcast to help skilled migrants rebuild their careers in a new country. You'll hear inspiring real-life stories, expert advice, and valuable tips to help you find a job and advance your career. Work in Progress. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
Minister, thanks for joining SBS World News.
Thank you, Anna.
There are a lot of questions about the particulars of this deal. Let's start at the sort of global level, though. Did you have to find a compromise here to send a message to the world?
Every trade agreement, Anna, is a compromise. That's how you reach trade agreements. This is a very, very good agreement for Australia. It demonstrates, as the President of Europe said yesterday, that there are countries that can still reach free and fair trade agreements. There's two ways in which the world is going right at the moment. One is down the protectionist path, and the other, the path that Australia and Europe are going down, is the path of free and fair trade. This agreement is going to be worth billions of dollars to the Australian community. In fact, my counterpart, Trade Minister Sefcovic, said yesterday that he thought over time this agreement would increase our trade by a third. That's worth about $40 billion and would put the EU ahead of the United States as our second biggest trading partner.
Did he have to sell out the cattle industry to get this deal?
The cattle industry has done really, really well.
But their own statement yesterday was that they thought this deal was, quote, crap.
Okay, so let's look at what we got for the cattle industry. So we got an eight-fold increase in our cattle exports, our beef exports, into the EU. We've been locked out of the EU for the last 50 years, Anna. In the first 2 years of this agreement, we're going to get 70,000 ton of high-grade, high-value Australian beef into the European Union. That's going to be worth billions of dollars to Australian beef farmers. This is a really good deal for beef farmers. They've referred to the Canada agreement, 50,000 tons. That was reached 10 years ago, and in that 10 years, Anna, not a single kilo of Canadian beef has gone into the European Union. We're going to get every kilo of that 70,000 tonnes over the next 2 years into Europe. Why? Because we were able to remove the conditions that has stopped the Canadians getting their product in. Not only that, we've got a review provision in our agreement, which will enable us to go back to see if we can get even more over time. This deal is not just good for the cattle industry, it's good for all of agriculture. And so as far as I can see, 95% of Australian industry has come out and backed the deal. And I say to the coalition, if you are serious about supporting free and fair trade, get on board. For 4 years, Anna, we've had a bipartisan approach to trade in this country. That has resulted last year in a record amount of trade, $1.3 trillion worth of trade last year. We got trade agreements with the UAE, UK, India, renewed all of our agreements in Southeast Asia. We need a Team Australia approach to trade. Trade is too important to politicise.
You have had years of negotiations. You've travelled the world trying to get what you say is the fairest deal. What extra concessions did you get on red meat?
Well, we got a higher volume of red meat. So the industry asked for three things. They said a higher volume. Well, we got that. They said removal of the difficult...
Not as high as they wanted, though.
Well, depends who you talk to in this in this industry. But I've certainly had communications with lots of farmers over the last 24 hours who are very happy to take advantage of that 70,000 tonne over the next 2 years. I don't think we will have any trouble at all in getting the wonderful Australian beef and beef producers to send their product into the EU. We won't have any trouble at all filling that quota. But the conditions that would have restricted our ability to get meaningful access to Europe has gone. And as I say, we get a chance to review it. No other free trade agreement entered in by the EU has that provision in it.
Now, there's quite a lot of detail around the different geographical locator naming conventions. So a couple of things from our audience as they're trying to understand this very detailed agreement. One question, is it possible to do things like naming a product Ozo instead of Uzo, for example? Can you slightly change the name to give it a bit of an Australian flavour and still have a branded product that has a geographical locator?
I'm sure there are ways around it. But look, the big issues that we faced in terms of geographical indicators were issues like Prosecco. There's only two countries in the world now that are going to be able to use the word Prosecco. That's Italy and Australia. So a great result for all those wonderful winemakers. And of course, all wine now goes into the EU tariff-free as a result of this agreement. Parmesan, we have the right to continue to use that. Kransky, again, another one, we've got the right to use that. Halloumi, I can go through a whole lot of them. But we don't need to change the name. For most of these essential products, this agreement provides that we can continue to use those names.
There are, though, phase-out clauses here, particularly with Prosecco and with some cheeses as well, as I understand it.
No, there are no phase-out clauses. There will ultimately, for some products, there'll be ultimately provisions that relate to exports, but Australia continues to be able to use all of these names.
Within Australia?
In Australia.
In terms, though, of those questions around the naming conventions, the geographical locators, you yourself are a winemaker. Will it be hard for Australia to send a product into the EU market if they can't use the word Prosecco? And what word should they use?
Overwhelmingly, the wine that we will send to the EU as a result of the removal of these tariffs will be the names that people are using already. I'm not aware that we export Prosecco to the EU, so I don't think that's an issue. But in South Australia, we have the wonderful Clare Valley and the Barossa Valley. We'll continue to be able to use export Shiraz, Cabernet, Riesling, all the products that we currently produce. But this time, they go in tariff-free. That makes us far more competitive in the European market. And from the conversations I had with my counterpart, Maris Sefcovic, he loves big, bold Australian red wines.
How tough was the negotiation with him? I believe you might have shared a couple of red wines along the way. Was that where you got the deal done? Was it over a glass of wine in the evening?
No, we celebrated over a glass of wine on Monday night. We had our final meeting in Sydney on Monday afternoon. It's tough negotiating. This fellow is the toughest negotiator that I've come across in 50 years, but he's also a fair negotiator. And he understood, just like me, that we needed to send a message to the rest of the world. We can each reach agreement on free and fair trade. So we did have a celebratory Cabernet from the Clare Valley, and he very much enjoyed that.
Despite this massive news, which would normally be the major headline, the fuel crisis that's kind of gripping the nation is taking over. From a trade perspective, is Australia now looking to China to potentially get both aviation and general fuel?
Look, we'll look to all of the suppliers to ensure that we continue to provide petrol, diesel and airline fuel. I think it's not unfair to say that one of the hallmarks of the Albanese government over the last 4 years is the re-establishment of good relations in our region. That managed to get us back $20 billion worth of trade that had been banned in China. I've got good relations with all of my counterparts in the region. I know them, I speak with them frequently, and of course you will have seen last week that the Prime Minister and the Prime Minister of Singapore made a very important statement on fuel security. So, look, I don't underestimate the problems that we face right now as a result of the war in the Middle East, but in the way we always do this in the Albanese government, we'll coolly and calmly work through and get a solution to every problem.
China, though, has massive fuel reserves. So is that something that you're directly working with China on?
We will talk with all of our colleagues about how we might solve this this problem.
Would you consider adjusting the customs duty on imported fuel and petrol products?
Those are issues I think that you should raise with the minister responsible for all of that, and that's not me.
As the trade minister, though, I guess there's a thought that you'd be involved in these conversations at this point in time.
Look, my conversations are frequently with all of my colleagues. I've established good relations with them, and I'll continue to be talking with them, as I always do, to resolve all of our problems in this region.
There have been some critics who say that the government has been complacent. It's told everybody to relax, not to panic, but that there is clearly a restriction that people are feeling on their lives at the moment. The New South Wales Premier, Chris Minns, just said he thought that the federal government did need to sort of do things on a national basis. When will the federal government step in and do something significant to make people feel like the fuel is being apportioned fairly?
Look, Chris Bowen announced just yesterday that we are relaxing the rules on the requirements for diesel fuel. He did something similar with petrol last week. We'll continue to work through methodically all of these issues. We don't want people to panic buy fuel because that won't help the situation. And we're doing our absolute best now to get fuel, particularly into the regions where petrol stations have run out of fuel. But we're focused on this issue. Chris Bowen is focused on this issue, and we will eventually resolve it.
Could you have reacted more quickly?
I think we've reacted in a responsible way. We've taken decisions as the issues have arisen, and we'll continue to do that.
Last question. You've just gone through the South Australian election. I'm sure you've dissected it in great detail. What happens if the Conservative parties find a way to work together at the next federal election? How worried are you about the potential for One Nation's rise to, in the end, cost Labor?
Well, that's an interesting possibility, but I don't see any evidence of that in South Australia. Matt Canavan was elected to the leadership of the National Party on the basis that he was going to take on One Nation and get all those One Nation votes back. South Australia was the first test of that last weekend. Under Matt Canavan, the National Party vote in South Australia dropped to below 1%, and of course One Nation was on 22%. On his first outing, I don't think Matt has done very well, so I don't see any evidence that Matt is bringing people back to the National Party. In fact, I think you could say that he's actually losing votes in the days of the likes of Carlene Maywald, a National Party Member of Parliament, are long gone.
What's the timeline you've set yourself to try and increase the size of the Parliament? Do you think you can get it done before the next election?
So the committee that looks at these things after every election is meeting as we speak, and I'll be looking forward to their report. I think it's time to review it. We haven't had a change in the number of Members of Parliament for 40 years. Our population has doubled in that time, Anna, and so it's appropriate to look at it, but I'm going to await the outcome of the report.
Thank you very much for your time.
Nice talking with you, Anna, as always.
Our Medicine returns for a powerful new season.
Our role is being there on someone's worst day. It can also be a really tough place to work.
Step onto the front line with First Nations medical practitioners.
You had a fall, did you?
With unprecedented access.
You can't control what's going to happen next.
The series reveals how modern medicine and cultural knowledge work together to deliver better care.
That's a pretty beautiful thing to be part of.
Our Medicine. Stream now on SBS On Demand.